Okay, thank you for coming. We will call the meeting to order and we'll have roll call, please.
Our Caliente Band of Hawaiian Indians. City of Flag. City of Cathedral City.
Here.
City of Coachella.
Here.
Desert Healthcare District. City of Desert Hot Springs.
Here.
City of Indian Wells.
Here.
City of India.
Present.
City of La Quinta.
Present.
City of Palm Desert.
Here.
City of Palm Springs.
Here.
City of Rancho Mirage. Riverside County District 4.
Here.
Torres Martinez Desert Kalia Indian. Chair, we have.
Thank you. Okay, please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Chair, for the record, I would like to announce that the city of Rancho Mirage is now governed.
We do have a few new board members. Good. We'd like to have them introduce themselves. We'll start off with Council Member Perez.
Hi, good morning. Elena Perez, newly elected council member for the city of Coachella, and it's a pleasure to be part of this committee.
Well, you've been here.
Yeah, but it's my second meeting.
Yeah, still kind of new.
Hi.
You have been here as well, too.
I have been to public safety. I'm the alternate for homelessness.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Chair, I'd also like to announce that the rep for Torres Martinez.
Good morning.
Good morning. Okay, we'll move on to public comments. Any public comment?
No, Chair, we don't have any public comment.
Thank you. Chair and committee comments.
Yeah, I got something like the chair.
Okay, Mark.
If it's possible, I just wanted to bring notice and give a shout out to our homeless liaison. We just have two, I find it here. I just want to let you know that two guys been doing in the month of March. As you see, I came prepared. Here. But these two young men, Novi's pretty new on it. Officer Novi's pretty new. But Brooks has been on it for about 3 years now. But in the month of March, these two officers made 756 HOL contacts. Services rendered 660. Services declined 648. One family reunites. Partnership contacts 32, campsites marked 30. We cleaned up 117 campsites in Cathedral City in March, and shopping carts removed 50 of those. And there's a lot of locations where the campsites were. But that's just two officers working. Could you imagine what we could do if we had some more funding and more assets to help us here? So I just wanted to share that with you because I think they're doing a fabulous job. Thank you.
Send them our congratulations as well, too. And we really appreciate the work that they're doing as well,
Thank you.
I know it's tough. Every city is dealing with their own little issues as well, too. But thanks for sharing that.
Thank you.
Anybody else?
Some quick sharing. Good morning. I just wanted to recognize somebody very special in our community, and that's Ms. Darla Burkett. She'll be retiring from the Coachella Valley Rescue Mission as director. She's going to stay with us for a while there as we work on the transition. Nonetheless, she'll be retiring. So I just wanted to, pay a debt of gratitude to her and recognize her for the excellent work she does. It's heartfelt work that we do working with unsheltered folks and people who have challenges in our community. And she's someone who does it with heart and compassion. So I just wanted to recognize Darla.
Thank you, Darla. Yeah, she's done a great job, Darla, for a long time. Anything else from staff?
There's no other committee member comments. I'm not stealing any thunder from Councilmember Pott. She told me to say it. But we are getting some word out of Desert Hot Springs that they're looking for ways to rejoin the program in the next budget year, which would be very exciting. So these are some strong supporter. Thank you for that leadership. And if that comes through in the next budget, then we'll certainly be bringing items probably back to you to address some previous actions.
Thanks. And we'd like to acknowledge Tom Kirk, who's joined us this morning. Thank you for coming, Tom. Our executive director is doing a great job, so thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll move on to the consent calendar. If there aren't any changes or corrections, I'll entertain a motion to approve the consent calendar.
So moved.
Second. There's a motion, second. All in favor?
Aye. Okay.
Opposed?
I'll abstain because I wasn't
intended. Okay, one abstention. And that motion will carry. Okay, we'll also notice that Jay is here from Palm Springs. Okay, great. Okay. Nothing held up in the consent calendar. We'll move on to the 1 year update from Palm Springs Navigation Center. So, Jay, you're here, you're on.
Thank you, Chair and Committee Member Jay Rada, Director of Housing and Community Development for the City of Palm Springs. I just want to note that there is a very strong history, and I think I'm preaching to the choir when I say there's a strong history of addressing homelessness in the Coachella Valley, dating back to 1999 when there was a task force on homelessness. Some of you may recall the work all the cities did with Roy's Desert Resource Center. The county came in and started providing county crisis teams. We had some cool and warm centers throughout the Coachella Valley that were sponsored by the county. And, of course, the CVAG Housing First program that kicked off. So there's been a lot of work going on over what seems to be about 25 years. So I'm going to report on the Palm Springs Navigation Center, but it's important to understand that the Navigation Center is actually, when we say Navigation Center, there's actually three operations going on. One is the early entry facility, which is a 50-bed overnight shelter, and it's congregate shelter there. It's been having about a 92% occupancy since opening back in March of last year. The feeder into the early entry facility, and I don't think it's on the slide, is the Access Center, which is the facility on El Cielo Road across from the airport. And that's where individuals go for daytime drop-in services and get enrolled to go to the early entry facility. And there's the Navigation Center, which provides interim housing, and it's for residents started moving in back in November of 2024. And right now, 65 of the 80 units are occupied. But I do want to point out that of the single units, there are 58 occupied, which is about 89%. Of the family units, there is 100% occupancy, which is 5 units. And where we've been having a little bit of trouble is with contacting and getting transitional age youth into the program, which is we have 2 transitional age youth occupying 2 of 10 units that are available to them, which is about 20% of occupancy.
And while you're pausing, who has not had an opportunity to tour that facility? We would encourage you to do that. Maybe set something up, because I know this committee did tour it last year while it was under construction. So it's quite a facility. So,
yes, please be happy to set that up. We have Martha's Village and Kitchen as the operator of the facility. They do operate the Access Center, the early entry facility, and the Navigation Center. And what they provide is a progression of services and programs that help individuals work towards stabilizing their lives. So again, the Access Center, daytime drop-in center, 17,491 total services provided that could be duplicated by individual. On an unduplicated basis, they've served 604 individuals for the period from July 1, 2024 through February 28, 2025. Case management and benefits provided were 2,430. You can see on the slide that there have been 985 housing placements and assistance and referrals. So of the individuals they're helping, they're providing quite a bit of information. And of course, 40 individuals were placed into additional housing and transition units. The early entry facility, as I mentioned, is 50 beds available for overnight shelter in a congregate facility. There's about 92% utilization on average per night. And you can see that 440 unduplicated individuals have been served at the early entry facility. There's also a number of individuals that the Palm Springs Police Department has assisted. Under the arrangement we have 50 beds with the early entry facility plus 5 beds that are for Palm Springs Police Department to bring individuals after hours. So they have worked with 148 different duplicated individuals for their health services. And again, through the early entry facility, there's been 31 successful exits. Meals are served. A total of 34,567 meals have been served. And we also support individuals with pets and have 13 dogs and 3 cats housed at the early entry facility.
Can you define a successful exit?
What successful exit would be leaving the facility and moving on into permanent housing, temporary housing, or family reunification. So any one of those would be counted. In regards to temporary housing or interim housing, we have the Navigation Center, where if you're following the progression of the services offered, you could go from the early entry facility, congregate beds, into the Navigation Center, which are individual units that are made available to these individuals. One of the challenges is with the Navigation Center, of these 80 beds or pods, I should say, is that the individual's incomes are limited to 15% of the area median income. And that's a requirement from the home key funds that we use from the state to have the facility built. 15% AMI is about $10,250 annually. If you compare that to supplemental security income, that's about $11,604 annually. So if you're receiving supplemental security income, you may not be eligible to get into the Navigation Center because of the income requirement. And again, the Navigation Center was started taking in clients in November of 2024. There have been exits. Two of them are successful exits. One of those individuals did move on to get an apartment, and so they're living independently in that sense. The individuals are also provided with meals. And as you can see on the slide, 6,780 meals had been served in the short time frame between November and February of 2025. And I also want to note that we utilize encampment resolution funds. So the City of Palm Springs received these funds in October and have used them to do outreach to specific individuals that were in the Palm Springs, that were located in the Wash in the Palm Springs area. And according to the rules of the program, it had to be individuals specifically from encampments like that. And a lot of people think, oh, it's encampment resolution, we can go in, clean it up, move people around. And that really wasn't the intention of those funds. It's actually meant to be identifying those individuals in encampments, doing outreach, providing services, getting them housed for an interim basis or getting them housed permanently. And so that's one of the challenges we have with utilization of the encampment resolution funds. We do have good partnerships where we've identified a number of individuals who are in the WASH and are currently working to have them placed into the navigation center also. There's about 30 individuals from the encampment that are now in the navigation center. So the program that Martha's tries to provide is intended to be a well-rounded experience connecting individuals and to each other and providing wellness at different levels. This includes having a bingo games, interactive activities, yoga, art enrichment, and it also includes having the Desert Healthcare District mobile unit come by the center. Palm Springs Disposal provides an internship for right now, it's one of the individuals there at the Navigation Center. We work with Wellness Equity Alliance. Riverside Health, University Health comes by also to help out with providing mental health and substance abuse treatment. When we first did this, we wanted to address some of the challenges that Martha's had been encountering. And one of those is just the complexity of the behaviors of the individuals. I mean, Martha's has been doing this work for a long, long time, several decades. So they are still, though, encountering, in new situations. And the best they can do is try to de-escalate the situations and provide help and resources where the individuals to assist those individuals who are suffering. And similarly, with the Navigation Center, this is a newly constructed facility. We're finding that those items that need attention are under warranty. And the challenge with working on warranties is that it can take a while before the warrantor responds and comes out and provides someone to fix the items in the facility that need repairs. We could ask maintenance facility staff to work on those, but we do not want to risk voiding the warranties. If any of you have had refrigerators go on the fritz and try to use a warranty, you may know what a challenge that can be. Again, Palm Springs Police Department has been a big part of our effort in addressing homelessness. They've made over 600 contacts with unhoused individuals, reunited 41 of those with their families, and have helped 112 that were not receiving assistance from the Navigation Center. And we do encounter individuals who, while offered, might be eligible, they do not want to stay in the Navigation Center. The rules, they're just not ready to live that structured life. And so they decline taking a room sometimes. We were also successful in putting together a CBAT team, a community behavioral assessment team, which is a county behavioral assessment staff person that works with one of our police officers. And they go out into the community and are on call and can provide behavioral health assistance on calls to individuals that may be called in for that. They've already had 200 calls for services, and I should note, not all the calls are for unsheltered people. There's been a slight impact to our fire department's 911 calls. 15 have been called into the navigation center. 10 have been called into the El Cielo facility, which is the access center across from the airport. And in total, 158 calls were put into the navigation center for 911 calls. Our fire chief hopes that it will be, we'll be able to be more creative and have some on-site help at the navigation center to alleviate 911 service calls, and maybe something similar to what CBAT is doing with our police officers. And that's it. I'm happy to answer questions you may have.
Any questions we can ask?
You had mentioned the youth portion. What are the requirements for the youth? Like, is that, what is the age limit? What are you looking at when you're accepting youth into the facilities?
18 to 24.
Okay.
And the income limits would apply. So that would be less than 15% of the area median income. And one of the tricky things is if they are coming in through the Encampment Resolution Fund program, and they don't have to, they need to come straight from being unhoused. That's one of the rules with the ERF program.
Okay. Thank you.
Is there a time limit on unhoused, like a year, 6 months? How long would they have to be unhoused?
It's like previous two. These were for the encampment resolution fund. It was the individuals have to be documented as having been in the encampment and remain unhoused. So it's that the key there is not how long have they been unhoused, but were they from the original encampment that the funds were made available for, and are they still unhoused?
Thank you.
And you said that Palm Springs Police has 5 beds that are safe for them. Are any other law enforcement agencies able to take people there too?
No, they would have to contact the Palm Springs Police Department and coordinate that. But I will say 92% occupancy, it's pretty full. And that's not including the 5 beds. The 5 beds also do get quite a bit of utilization.
Do you encounter people with children, or is that really not happening? And if
we
you do, what do you do with them?
We have 5 family units at the navigation center. They're all full. So we have families.
And just for context, this is a Palm Springs initiative that CVAG utilizes with some resources to bring homeless to?
I would say, you know, the application was a joint application from the city of Palm Springs and the county of Riverside. And the county stepped in and provided quite a bit of funding to help with the construction. But that application is what got the bulk of the funds from the state for the construction of the navigation center. And individuals are brought in through the HMIS system. So if they if we have their openings come up, Marcus will check the HMIS system and see who might be available out there to come in and stay. But there's also an intake happening at the access center.
And Jane, correct me if I'm wrong, but the state, I think, kicked in excess of $30 million.
The state grant was $19 million. And the county kicked in about $15 million.
Okay.
And the city was in it for about $8 million.
And so, again, for context, this is this facility obviously embraces homelessness, and we're on the homeless committee here at CVAG. But the connection to CVAG is.
And maybe I'll take a stab at this one. What this committee was supportive of funding efforts along the way and has been tracking the progress. So we did facilitate a tour last year when it was under construction. And obviously bringing a 1-year update for our CB Housing First program. Our program is actively working with both Palm Springs PD, as well as other law enforcement agencies and the Navigation Center. For example, the encampment response that they were talking about in the WASH. One of the things we're looking at is how many of our CB 200 clients that are from Palm Springs are also in that encampment and might be able to, how do we coordinate services? And so there's some coordination there. That
sure. Thank you.
And also, Jay, for some of the units that maybe are not being utilized, can you use those on a temporary basis for some unhoused individuals?
No, they'd have to go in through the program. I mean, it is temporary. These are not permanent housing. So if individuals are in there, it is meant to be temporary. Housing navigators will work to find placements for the individuals throughout Riverside County. Most individuals do want to seem to prefer to stay more local in the Coachella Valley, but there's a program, and the individuals would have to go in through that. And again, it's through HMIS, and when individuals go in, they're accepted and tracked into the program through that.
What's the average length of stay for an individual?
Well, it just opened in November, so we're really not seeing, those types of numbers yet. That's difficult to answer because one of the other challenges I'm sure you're all seeing is the lack of affordable housing. Where would individuals go after they leave temporary housing? So making that resource available too is important towards addressing bringing someone who's unsheltered into an overnight bed, then into interim housing. The next step would be to try and get them into permanent housing, and there is a shortage of permanent housing available.
There's an income requirement as well too, so most of these people are not working either.
Some of them do work, but for the vast majority of them are not working. That is a challenge.
So one more question, kind of to follow up on Tober. But we don't know how transient these populations are. So they may end up in Palm Springs, but they don't necessarily always, I don't know if they're aware of city limits the way we are all aware of city limits. Are they transient between, let's say, Rancho Mirage and Desert Hot Springs, moving back and forth and just then happen to be in Palm Springs and get to the navigation center? Do you find, or is there not enough data yet?
Really not enough data yet, but based on the information received, the individuals report that they are in the Palm Springs zip code. So the vast majority of them do say that, and that could be because they were in the Wash in the Palm Springs zip code. And again, that facility is filling, so I'm not sure with the transient nature. Individuals may have traveled back and forth, but at this time and when they go in, the majority of what we're seeing are stating that they're from the Palm Springs zip code.
Okay, so data may avail if people are moving between multiple cities. We just don't know yet.
Correct.
Okay.
For an example, our bridge on Ramon and Landau is right Palm Springs Cathedral City. So it depends where they put their encampment, whether it's a Palm Springs issue or Cathedral City.
Well, of course, they make sure they're on the Palm Springs.
Well, that's okay. But the two departments do work well together. So.
Okay.
And these officers are pretty good at knowing who they are, knowing their first names, knowing where they're from already. So they know basically where they're coming from.
Okay. Interesting.
Kind of like the bridge between Indian Wells and La Quinta.
There you go.
They stay on the Indian Wells side.
This is like, I think, thank you for your presentation, Jay. I think some of those questions are, I appreciate them because what it does, it really brings us back and underscore the fact that this committee, we work collaboratively with the whole valley and county. Whether we're directly involved with an entity or we partner with a nonprofit or faith-based community, we want folks to understand they could come to this committee and those resources, we find those resources. Some of the times, one of the biggest challenges is trying to locate the resources. So, but if you can come to this committee or CVAC, that's what, the JPA is. And the other thing is too, like you said, a lot of these folks, they don't have city limits when they set up. So what the Navigation Center in Palm Springs does, it kind of takes some of the stress and burden off some of the other facilities and partners that we have in the valley. And that's something that with Roy's kind of went away, it gave way to this. So I appreciate what you all are doing over there. It's a fantastic effort in Palm Springs. And once again, it just speaks to the collaborative effort in our valley. We are a good model for what we're doing. There's a lot of scrutiny and discussion going on with funding for homelessness, and I think the strategies that we have now are working, and I hope they continue to stay that way. So thank you.
Thank you, Jay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll move on to our next informational item. It's the annual contribution to the CDU First program. Erica.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. The next two items actually involve a little bit of history that the committee has been working on, and we thought it was important to provide you with updates as they are, particularly this first one is an item that will be coming before you at the local level, and the second one is one that this committee has asked about over the years. I'll dive into the first one first. And that is the annual contributions to CV Housing First. And so this would be CVAG's direct program that deals with the CV 200. So a little bit of recap on that is on how to fund our CV Housing First program. Many of you will recall that in November, we had some conversations about the contribution, which has been historically $100,000. This year, as you'll note in the fiscal analysis, we are dipping into the reserves of the program in order to make the funding work in the budget. And at the recommendation of this committee, the executive committee did authorize a contribution of $125,000 ask to all of its members. I should note that the county, well noted in the staff report and the MOU, is different. They have a general fund contribution that is larger, and they also are very supportive of our grants. In addition, the MOU would include kind of an incremental cost adjustment each year that would be reviewed by this committee. But in authorizing this idea, the executive committee did say that they wanted the finance committee to take one more look at it before we brought it out to the cities, just so that way everybody knew it had been well vetted. So as you may recall, the contributions had been unchanged since 2009. Our costs were not unchanged since 2009. They've gone up substantially. We have tried to offset the costs by grants. And this was all information that we brought to our finance committee. We pointed out some options of retaining the standard contribution across the board for all for all city contributions. We also offered some options, whether it was changing the range of contributions to be catered to a city's population size or how many individuals they had in the point in time count, or even whether larger cities with larger budgets should contribute more than others, and other just kind of options on the table. In the end, the finance committee confirmed the approach we've used for years, which is to keep the same amount, the same ask across the board, for $125,000. And so that will be what you will see coming to each of your jurisdictions here in the next couple of weeks. So I just wanted, this is really a kind of a recap, since some of you are new and you'll be seeing this on the council agendas as it was. I was actually in the city of La Quinta last night discussing the program metrics and how we're doing. I think it was well received. Chair Pena can correct me if I'm wrong there. I'm just kind of discussing the contributions, and we'll be reaching out to your staff. Some staffs have already reached out to us to talk about that for the coming fiscal year budget. So with that, I'm happy to address any questions.
Questions for Erica?
Yeah, so the City of Indian Wells has now a policy in place on giving around supporting data on the effectiveness of the donations that we give, contributions we give to important organizations like homeless and the CVAG. So I would hope that the package that the city gets exemplifies and shows clearly the positive effect of CVAG homelessness with regard to, our contributions, where they're going, the number of people served, the number of people who have come off the streets, et cetera.
Yes, absolutely. And it's actually in the MOU, we would provide that on a quarterly basis to each of your cities. And I know we don't see this as a donation. We see this as a contribution to sustain the program in your community and in the neighboring communities. It's a little bit different than, say, the Grants and Aid program. But yes, we'll be happy to provide whatever the city wants and come to council and in the finance committee and discuss as well. I know we were on the agenda before We'll be mid-cycle our discussion, but happy to come back and answer any questions.
I've got another question for Palm Springs. Do you guys contribute annually to the, organization that we just heard about?
Yeah.
Do you know what that contribution is?
It's all the same. What is it?
The city contributes to our program, and yes, it's the same. And I think, was your question about the program that they're running at Martha's?
Yeah, well, not with
that one. I don't
at the facility.
The city has some grant funds to operate, but will utilize dental funds for the operations also.
I think it's $5 million. It isn't operating annual operations for $5 million.
$5 million a year.
Yeah.
Yes. And then what does Palm Springs contribute? $5 million?
Well, $5 million.
Right. So I mean grants may reduce that, other things may reduce that. That was my inquiry.
Yeah, we hope, but
yeah, I understand. Okay, got it. Yes. $5 million. It's a big number.
Yeah.
Yeah,
this year grants are paying the majority. In 2 to 3 years out, it without new grants, the city would assume that responsibility.
But again, that's the responsibility for that specific program. That has nothing to do with the contribution for the Housing First.
Correct.
The Housing First is us contributing to our program, and we utilize the resources such as what Palm Springs is doing so that we can get people in our program into either Martha's or what's going on Palm Springs or the Rescue Mission or Permanent Housing. The contribution that's being asked of from CBAG is completely separate from that facility in Palm Springs. It's just an additional resource that we use to help our program.
Understood. Thank you so much.
Great. Thanks. Okay, Erica, do you want to talk about landlord incentive program?
He's like, twitch the microphone. I like to talk about this every time.
I don't know, the chair summarized that pretty well. We might be on the road show. Landlord incentive program. This is going to be a little bit of history and discussing our first success for the program that we just had recently. So the landlord incentive program, so kind of big picture before I kind of delve into this. When we took over the program, when CBAG took over the program, most of our permanent housing solutions, which means we took them from our crisis stabilization unit and got them into permanent housing, was done through vouchers. There's a couple of types of vouchers without getting into all the details. And there could be project-based or person-based. But essentially, they subsidize your rent, okay? When you have a voucher, it's basically set at market rate. I know I'm going to give really high level. I'm not going to get into all the nitty gritty here, but the voucher is set at just generally the market rate. So when you think about a community like the Coachella Valley and the rental market here, oftentimes the opportunities for what we can afford, what a client could afford under their voucher is limited. And the vouchers are increasingly limited. If you look at the quarterly report, for example, we only have about half of the permanent housing solutions were done through these vouchers, which is very different than what we saw just a few years ago, which, again, then reduces the amount of opportunities for some of our clients and what they could afford in terms of a permanent solution. We've also discovered that you can't subsidize the gap. Back of this. You can't subsidize the gap. We actually had an instance in India where we had a landlord willing to take on one of our clients. They had a voucher, and I think the cost difference was $150 a month. We couldn't make that a permanent housing solution because you can't subsidize that. We couldn't use, say, local funds to cover that gap with the voucher. It's not allowed. What is allowed is this idea of bonuses or incentives. It's called a landlord incentive program. This is a way to encourage landlords when you've got particularly affordable housing units with long wait lists and a number of renters who are interested in taking a unit to take on a client who may have a very different kind of background, which is often the types of clients that the CB Housing First chronically homeless are. So we looked at creating a couple years ago a landlord incentive program. In doing so, we modeled it after the city of Riverside, which had had some success. We also were aware that the county of Riverside was launching a landlord incentive program, which would incentivize landlords to participate and become part of the voucher program. If a landlord comes in and says they have 10 units, they're
There's a whole process the county takes them through, and they can get a landlord incentive program for taking on voucher type clients. Essentially, it's a one-time payment. So if you're, it would be, if an existing landlord took on a client, we would pay them $600 one-time payment for the unit. And if it was a brand new landlord, it would be $1,000. We finally had our first success. I should say, you can't use both programs. So landlords, you can't benefit if you're a landlord from both the county program and the local program. We've used it intermittently, or tried to use it intermittently. We recently had our first success in getting a client housed at a board and care unit. Through the landlord incentive program was kind of one of those opportunities to really get the client through the door. Really a quick summary of my report. And I'm happy to address any questions.
Questions for Erica.
When you say one-time payment, it's literally one $1,000 payment, not monthly, just once, just to get them in?
Yes. Yeah, so when we house our clients, we look for opportunities. Like, it's common that our program would cover, say, moving costs and help our client get moved in. And this, this would be a kind of some reassurance to the landlord. I mean, we do follow-ups with our clients, but it's another way to incentivize the landlord to work with a program like us, and particularly clients like ours.
And then after that, what does the landlord receive?
The landlord, well, it would depend on how the person is subsidizing their, or how is their funding. Some of our clients have some minimal income that they would then take on the rent on their own, or if it was a voucher client who hadn't benefited from the county that we would use, then they would use their vouchers to pay for their rent.
And Erica, what's the average voucher? How much is it?
This is where Candace comes in. For those of you who don't know, Candace had to stand at the podium a lot last night.
So we actually haven't seen a lot of the vouchers that are worth a certain dollar amount where we can take it to any landlord. We haven't seen those in a very long time. Back in the day when we used to see them, if you look up the fair market rents, they're typically around the fair market rents, or maybe a little bit above if they're having a hard time getting landlords to accept the rate for the fair market rent for the voucher. So recently what we've been dealing with is either permanent supportive housing or project-based vouchers. And so in those situations, they're going to an actual community and then they're paying 30% of their income if they have income.
And that's a challenge, Alex, that, you know, the vouchers are kind of short-term there and are gone, and the rental market is extremely limited, and rents have increased, obviously.
And we bring these items to you because these all factor in then to the numbers you're seeing, right? And when you talk, we measure success, as kind of came up, we measure success by permanent housing solutions. And that's something we've been doing since the beginning. That is our success metric. And so when you think about the challenges of rising rents, less doors, right, limited vouchers, this all comes into play when we would try to be very transparent about our metrics and our challenges and our opportunities with this program. So this all kind of factors into that. But this is really just an informational update. So you all
know. And the lack of electricity, power, trying to build affordable housing units, it really gets even more frustrating, as rancher lodges are experiencing, Indio has experienced, you know, the Kings as well too. So there are many, many challenges out there to get affordable housing in place.
Just to piggyback off what the chair is saying, I think in the back of our head, we have to keep that in mind when we talk about affordable housing. It's more like affordable living situations, right? How can we build our communities that are close to the amenities in our communities? They're shopping, grocery stores, churches, schools. How can we build our communities to be there? So you may have an affordable housing complex. But where's it located at? Do they have to get in their vehicle to drive their kids? So, you know, that's why our partners are so important. Our Sunline, our faith-based communities, our nonprofits, because they actually aid in some of those services. So when we talk about that, let's remember it's not just affordable housing, it's affordable living situations.
And affordable housing is not affordable to build, as we all know.
And I think a bigger factor to build on what the City of Indio said is it's different populations need different kinds of affordable housing. Those who are working and want to live in the city they work in and have children, those that are seniors where their money's changing monthly or maybe decreasing, LGBTQ youth and what they're facing. So we have such a broad population of people that need the housing, and what that housing has to look like to serve them is also an enormous challenge, because each of our cities has different types of populations.
Thank you, Erica. Okay, we'll move on. Next item is informational. Obviously, you have the attendance record. Do we have any updates from ex officio member?
Good morning. Excuse me. Good morning, and thank you, Chairman Pena and Council. I'm Angela Nicole. I'm the Executive Director of Shelters from the Storm. I come to the meetings just to give you updates and keep you informed on what's going on. April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, that some of you may or may not be aware of. We are participating in the National Denim Day on April 30th. This year's theme is Use Your Voice, so we can speak out against violence of all forms, especially sexual assault and dual victimization that's happening in this country from different realms. So we just wanted to share that. If you want to learn more, you can visit peaceoverviolence.org or denimday.org to learn more. We are asking you to wear your denim on the 30th and show your support. So, and if you want to add your purple in there to show your support for domestic violence as well, that would be great. We are doing well. We are here. We are going to continue the good fight. We are seeing a fluctuation in calls for services out of different factors, from fear to where do we go, what happens. We have a lot of calls that are concerned about their status and how are we going to serve them. So we are addressing those with individuals that are calling and trying to connect them with resources. But please know that the issues are still happening in our valley, and we are here to provide that support. So thank you so much for your time.
Okay, we'll move on to public comment on non-agenda items. Is there any public comment?
Don't have any, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Announcements. Our next meeting will be Wednesday, May 21st, and the Executive Committee will be meeting on Monday, April 28th. With that, we'll be adjourned, and thank you all for coming. See you soon.